My name is Charles, and for years, I've been the driver of the last bus. My shift starts at midnight and ends at 4 in the morning. Working the night shift has its share of loneliness, of course. But I've never experienced anything quite like what happened one autumn night. For the first few hours of my shift, everything went smoothly. A few passengers got on and off. It was around 2 o'clock in the morning when I arrived at the last stop before turning around and returning to the depot. The stop was located in a dark and desolate part of town, right next to an old cemetery. There were a couple of dim streetlights, but most of the streetlights were out. As usual, no passengers were waiting at the stop. As I waited for the scheduled time before departing, I turned on the interior lights of the bus to check that everything was in order. I was checking my rearview mirror when I saw a flash of movement in the darkness. I turned to look out the rearview mirror and, to my surprise, saw a man running toward the bus. It was not unusual for people to be late and trying to catch the last bus, but the way this man was moving struck me as odd. His movements were jerky and erratic, as if he was panicking. When he finally reached the back of the bus, panting and sweating, I could see his face. He was a middle-aged man with a wild, desperate look in his eyes. I decided to slow the bus down so that this man wouldn't miss it. I was never really one of those drivers who enjoy passengers missing the bus to go home, especially at times like that. The man got on the bus and sat in the back of the bus. His disturbing smile never disappeared from his face. I looked through the rearview mirror and noticed that there were no other passengers on the bus at that time. The bus resumed its march, and as we made our way through the empty streets, the man began to hum a haunting song. It was an ominous tune that I did not recognize, and his voice had an eerie tone that sent chills down my spine. As we moved on, the man continued his strange behavior. He began mumbling incoherent words and laughed disturbingly. I became increasingly uncomfortable and concerned for my safety. The possibility that I was dealing with a dangerous person became increasingly real. Finally, the man stood up and pressed the button indicating that he was getting off. This stop was completely deserted as usual. When I opened the door for the man to get off, he just stood there and kept smiling. I asked him to get off, but he did not respond. Instead, he began to walk slowly toward the front of the bus. I felt trapped in my seat, watching with growing anxiety as the man advanced toward me. His smile widened even more, revealing crooked yellow teeth. I realized I did not know how to deal with this situation, and the thought of confronting him directly terrified me. When the man was only a few steps away from me, he finally spoke. His voice was an eerie, icy whisper that made me shiver.
"Do you know who I am, driver?"
I shook my head, unable to answer. I had no idea who this man was or what he wanted.
"Don't you remember? I was one of your passengers many years ago, one night just like this. But you wouldn't let me off. You had fun watching me miss the last bus, didn't you?"
I had no memory of that incident, but that didn't matter at the time. I was too scared to think clearly. The man moved even closer, his face inches from mine. I could feel his cold, stinking breath on my face.
"This is your last stop, driver. Today, it's your turn to stay behind."
Before I could react, the man pushed me back with enormous force. I fell to the ground stunned as he lunged at me. I tried to scream, but his cold, skeletal hand closed over my throat, stifling my words. Looking terrified, I struggled desperately with the man who assaulted me. His eyes, full of fury and madness, were still fixed on mine as his grip grew tighter and tighter. I felt my life slipping away, and an overwhelming panic overcame me. In a last act of survival, I reached for a small flashlight I kept in my jacket pocket. I wielded it with all my strength and hit the man's head with all my might. The impact knocked him back, releasing his hold on my throat. Coughing and gasping, I took the opportunity to pull away from him. As I sat up, I saw the man withering in pain on the ground, holding his head. He looked dazed and confused. Without a second thought, I ran to the driver's door and slammed the safety door of the bus shut, making sure he couldn't reach me. Then frantically, I reached for my cell phone and called 911 for help. The emergency operator's voice calmed my nerves. I explained the situation and the location of the bus. I was promised that the police would be dispatched immediately. As I waited, I held the flashlight in one hand and the bus steering wheel in the other, watching the man on the ground. The man began to come to his senses, but instead of trying to open the front door or looking for a way out, he just sat there and stared at me. His haunting smile persisted, and it was bigger than ever. He didn't seem to be in pain or show any normal emotion. When the police officers finally arrived, the man was arrested without much resistance. As they handcuffed the man, he continued to whisper incomprehensible words and laugh, which increased my discomfort and fear of him. The officers assured me that an investigation would be conducted and that they would take steps to ensure my safety. After giving my statement to the police, I made my way to the bus stop, shaking and shocked by the experience. I couldn't recall any similar incidents, but the thought of having left someone behind on a night like that haunted me. Eventually, the authorities discovered that the man suffered from severe mental illness and had been wandering the streets for years. He was not one of my former passengers as he had claimed. Although that revelation relieved me to some extent, the experience left me deeply scarred. From that day on, nights working on the bus became even more lonely and terrifying for me. Every shadow in the darkness, every haunting laugh reminded me of that autumn night. The story became an urban legend in the area. My night bus, known as the Last Bus, gained an infamous reputation. Though I tried to move on, that sinister smile and the man's icy whispers never completely disappeared from my thoughts. And my nightlife was changed forever. Hello, everyone. We are thrilled that you have been enjoying our videos. Your support means the world to us. If you've liked what you've seen, please consider liking and subscribing to our channel. We would love to hear which one of our videos is your favorite. We're on a mission to reach 100,000 members in the SSG family, and with your help, we can achieve that goal. Thank you for being a part of our journey.
Public transportation is the most accessible mode of transportation for a lot of people around the world, especially people who cannot afford a car or private transportation, have the option of public transportation. It could be buses, trains, subways, etc. But what should a person do when their safety is in question while traveling on public transport? One such incident happened to me when I was at my university, and to date, I am terrified to travel alone on a bus. When I was around 19 and in my second year of college, my mother was diagnosed with cancer. It was really tough news for me and my parents to digest. I had a younger brother who was 12 at the time and was in school. Before the diagnosis, my mother was the pillar that held our house together. But the moment she was diagnosed and her treatment began, my dad was struggling to keep everything together. He had to take care of the house, look after my brother, take mom to her appointments, and do his job. Without me there, I could see my family going through a rough time, not just financially, but emotionally and mentally too. So I decided to go back home on weekends to help dad with everything. I took a part-time job in my college's library to earn some money to support my house. My college was just a two-hour drive away from my home. However, I did not have a car back then. So instead, I used to take a bus every Friday evening and Monday morning to get back and forth from my home to my college. I had taken the bus a lot of times, so I never really worried about traveling in it. I always carried my weekend bag, some books to study, and anything else I'd need for my stay. Usually, I'd take the bus around 7 in the evening and get home by 9 or 9:30 the latest. I really enjoyed the bus ride, as it was the only time in my week I'd get some peace. I could either take a nap, complete my projects, read books, or just listen to music. However, one day, I got a phone call from my little brother telling me that our mom was hospitalized. He didn't know the exact reason for her immediate hospitalization, but he begged me to come home, as he was alone and dad was in the hospital with mom. It was a Wednesday, and the time was around 8 in the evening. I was in no way prepared to go home, but I knew I had to be there for my family. So I quickly packed up a small duffel bag, threw in everything that I would need, and rushed to the bus stop. I knew very well that the last bus to my hometown left at 9 p.m. I somehow managed to reach the bus stop by 8:45. I was so worried and scared and felt so hopeless. I was trying to call my dad to know how mom was doing and also to inform him that I would be coming home sometime before midnight and that I would look after my brother. His phone was either engaged or out of coverage area. I finally called William on the landline and told him to hang on until I arrived. He was a very smart kid for his age. While I was waiting for the bus and talking on the phone, I did not realize that two tall and lean teen boys were standing close to me at the bus stop as well. Usually when I took the 7 p.m. bus, it used to have a lot of passengers on it. Therefore, I always felt safe to travel alone. But this time, I realized that the bus stop was deserted, except for me and the two suspicious-looking teens. I decided not to react unless the two tried to do something funny. I wasn't going to be the person who judged others over their appearance. And so far, the boys had done nothing except stand and talk to one another. I just hoped for the bus to arrive soon, so that I could get to my brother as fast as I could. Then suddenly, I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turn around to find the boy standing oddly close to me. He was almost in my personal space. From so close, I could make out the freckles on his pale skin, and he did not have any facial hair as well, so he was definitely 16 or maybe 17. Both of them looked around the same age. "Yes," I said. The boy standing in front of me said,
"I'm Billy, and that's Mark. We were wondering if you had a boyfriend."
This immediately raised a ton of red flags and warning signs in my mind. Being in college for 2 years had taught me enough. I knew what it meant when a guy asked a girl if she had a boyfriend. That's when I knew these two were up to no good. And even though they were younger than me, they had a good foot of height over me and just as many pounds. If they wanted, they could easily overpower my short petite frame. I took a few steps back and told them to back off and that I wasn't interested in their antics. But the kids were persistent. They kept hitting on me. They asked if I wanted to go back to their place for a little while and if I was up to having some fun with them. They told me they could make me feel really good. And all of their comments made me want to puke. They looked like punks, and I couldn't take it anymore.
"Shut up, you two!"
I yelled at them while clutching my duffel bag and my phone. My sudden outburst seemed to take them back as they did not expect such a reaction from me. And just then, the bus finally arrived. I thought I would get rid of them once I got into the bus. But to my utter shock, the two boys climbed onto the bus after me. The bus was unusually empty, except for the driver, me, and the two boys, and an elderly man sitting in the back seat. I knew if push came to shove, there would be no one to save me from these thugs. I sat in the middle, where I usually sit, and the boys took a seat too. One sat on the seat behind me, and the other in front of me. This time, I was really freaked. I contemplated calling my dad, but I knew he'd be worried to death with my mom already. So I didn't call to bother him. I knew I had to stand up for myself, and no one would come to save me. I sat near the window, and I could feel the guy sitting behind me playing with my hair. So I tied up my hair in a bun. That's when the guy sitting in front of me turned around and grabbed my neck, pulling me in towards him, and crashed his lips across my mouth. He started hissing me. I wanted to push him away, but the guy behind me held my hands behind my back. I could not do much. I was trapped. I wiggled my head and body to get out of their grip, but the boys were strong. I could not even scream. That's when someone ripped Billy's mouth from mine, and Mark too let go of my hands at the same time. I was in tears and so scared. I barely managed to look up and saw the same old man who was sitting in the back standing by my seat, looking at me worried.
"Are you okay, miss?"
he asked me. I was so scared and traumatized that I barely managed to nod. Mark was sitting still behind me, but Billy did not want to give up.
"Do you have any problem, old man? I think you should go and sit back in your seat, or else we will break all your old bones.
The old man chuckled and then slightly moved the lapel of his blazer, revealing a gun in a holster strapped to his abdomen. The moment Billy saw the gun, he paled and slumped in his seat.
If you touch, let alone look at this lady again, I will blow your brains out. I do not have many years to live anyways. I can spend the rest of my life behind bars for putting two idiots and potential rapists 6 feet under. But you boys are not even 20 yet. You'd lose your lives in the process. The choice is yours. You could get down at the next stop and behave yourselves. Or be ready to meet your maker.
The man stood there while Mark and Billy walked to take their seat in the front, right behind the driver. The man took a seat in front of me and said nothing, while I sobbed uncontrollably. As the bus stopped at the next stop, the two teens got off. However, there were cops waiting by the bus station, and they immediately arrested the two. They stopped the bus, walked up to the old man, and greeted him as if he were an old friend. They made sure I was all right, and that's when I got to know that the old man was a retired Marine and retired sheriff. He had the permit to carry the gun and use it if need be. I finally reached home safely, and to date, I'm glad that the old man saved me from the two idiotic and violent teenagers. After that day, I bought a secondhand car and started driving back and forth from college to home. I never took the bus again. What happened to me yesterday was the most horrifying experience I faced. I, as a person, who some people may consider as a workaholic, worked in two different jobs. I worked as a recruiter during the day and as a waitress at night. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, I spent more time at my house as I was working remotely as a recruiter. The second job I have mentioned was a part-time job, so I was able to work and have some time to spare for myself. The only difficulty I was facing was the fact that I had to take a bus to the coffee shop I was working in. My shift would begin around 6 a.m., so it was not difficult to go there, but my shift would end at midnight. Thus, I would have to rush to the bus stop to return to my house. Even though I hated rushing to catch a bus, I liked my job. And I liked the fact that I would be outside even though it was midnight. Enjoying the chilling breeze of the night every night was therapeutic. Yesterday was just like the other days. I worked full-time as a recruiter at my house and went out when I finished my work. The coffee shop was not really crowded, and I spent most of the time chatting with my colleagues. As my shift ended, I quickly went to the bus stop. The bus stop was on a road that few cars or people would pass by. It could hardly be called a bus stop, as it was just an area with a bench and a sign. The metal bench was rusty, and the movement had graffiti on it. Considering that this bus stop was in an isolated location where only a few would wait, I could understand the dirtiness of it. I checked the time and realized that I had run faster than usual, as I was there 5 minutes earlier than I usually am. As I started to wait for the bus to arrive, I saw a shadowy figure walking towards the bus stop. When he passed under the flickering streetlight, I was able to take a good look at him. He had his hoodie on, and his hands were in his pockets. He seemed young. He had a slight humpback, and he was strolling. I began to feel goosebumps as he approached the bus stop. It was the first time I saw someone else would take the bus from there. Around that time was enough to scare me, and his posture was only making things worse. As he came to the bus stop, he sat on the bench. I walked a little bit further to avoid being too close to him. Another minute passed. He began to whistle this unnerving melody. He whistled the same melody over and over again. After whistling for a minute, he stopped. At first, I was relieved that he had stopped, but the silence started to bother me. I felt like it was the silence before the storm. After several seconds of torturous silence, the man got up. He stood there, still his hands in his pockets, opened his mouth, and started to let out a mournful wail. He looked at me as he made the sound, slowly lifting his hands and pointing toward me. I was petrified. A drop of cold sweat fell from my forehead to the ground. He raised his other arm towards me and started to speak. "The bus will not arrive." His low voice sent shivers down my spine. I was so scared that I could not move a single muscle. He started to approach slowly. The way he walked resembled a zombie. As he came right next to me, he began to observe me. Without touching me, he started to smell me. I can still remember the high-pitched, inhaling sound he made as he continued to smell me. "You are one of us now," he whispered, while I could do nothing but experience that terrorizing moment as he held my shoulders. Very quickly, my survival instincts kicked in, and I could move my muscles again. I pushed him as hard as I could. From the impact, he lost his balance and fell to the ground. Still making the horrible wailing sound, he grabbed my ankle. I panicked and kicked his head. My reaction made him angry as he tightened his grip. His fingernails stabbed my ankles as his grip got more forceful. I kicked for several times until he let go. He lay on the ground, holding his head while crying. "You betrayed us," he said with a disappointed voice. I heard the sound of the bus coming closer, and I turned around to see if it was coming. I could not have been much happier to catch a bus quickly coming closer. "We shall see each other again," the man whispered. I turned around to see him, but when I turned around, I could not see anyone. The bus stopped before me, and with a calming, whistling sound, its doors were open. As soon as I got on the bus, I started to speak with the driver and tell him what had happened. I could see the horror in his eyes as he said, "You have seen the Night Whisperer. People that live here hear the wailing sound of this creature, and some believe that it was coming from a ghost. It became an urban legend around here. So you are saying that the Night Whisperer was a man in a dark hoodie?" "I do not believe he was a man, dear. I think you have encountered a spirit." Obviously, I did not believe him, but I was still shocked by the recent incident. My body did not stop shaking for a couple of minutes. The driver tried his best to comfort me, and realizing that there were no other passengers on the bus, he offered to take me to a police station. I thanked him and accepted his offer. When I got off the bus, I rushed into the station. Officers saw me and, realizing my frightened state, directed their attention to me. They listened as I told them about the Night Whisperer, including the folktales the driver told me. After listening to my story, they gave me a glass of water, and one of the officers began to speak. "We started to receive complaints about the wailing sound around that area 2 months ago. At first, we did not focus on it as it seemed less important considering the other duties we had. But after a while, the complaints began to pile up, and we knew that we had to check it out. We tried our best to find the source of the sound, but we could not find it. Then, we began to hear that children and women were disappearing." Another officer came next to us with some papers and a pen. She placed them on the table and listened as the other officer continued his speech. "We started an investigation in the area. We have found some people like you that claim to be witnesses of the Night Whisperer, as they called it. The investigation is still ongoing, but we believe that a suspect is a man in his 20s with a mental disorder or a drug addiction. Either way, your report will be helpful for the investigation." I wrote what I went through in detail and left the station. As I was walking back to my house, in a shadowy corner of a back alley, I saw the figure again. "I know where you live. They cannot save you," he shouted, and started to make the wailing sound. I ran back to the station and asked for protection. They told me that they could escort me to my place. They left me right in front of my house. As I went inside my house, I called my employer and told him that I wanted to quit my job as a waitress. Upon hearing what happened to me, He understandingly accepted my resignation. After that incident, I could not sleep nor go outside. I know it has only been a day after it, but I am scared that this trauma will haunt me for years. Even now, I can still hear the uncanny wail of the man. Looking out of my window, I sometimes see shapes shifting inside the shadows and feel in utter disturbance. I am getting more and more paranoid every hour. I cannot get rid of the feeling of being watched. I hope the police find the suspect as soon as possible, or I won't be able to survive going through these challenging days.
Violent crime is rare in Japan, but that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. I'm Will, and I certainly didn't see myself and my best friend being victims of something so rare while traveling. James and I decided to travel for summer break after our second year of college. We had worked hard in school and our jobs and rewarded ourselves with a trip to Japan to enjoy all the things it had to offer, especially anime. I can't wait to see all things anime. James, my best friend, beamed excitedly as we boarded the airplane. I laughed. I can't wait to eat authentic ramen and steam buns. I licked my lips. I want every noodle dish I can get my hands on, James drooled. We spent the flight talking about all the things we had planned and everything we wanted to eat that we'd seen in anime shows. There was an event that was taking place on Halloween night where you get dressed up as your favorite anime character and interact with other fans. Voice actors were going to be there as well to do meet and greets. James and I could hardly stand how excited we were for the event. Our first week in Japan was spent getting drunk off hot sake and a majority of the traditional dishes. Our plan was to spend an entire month there so we could celebrate Halloween there, but be home for Thanksgiving. So far, we were having the time of our lives. Finally, Halloween came, and we were going to the event we had been looking forward to the most. I was dressed up as Ren Okamura from the hit anime Blue Exorcist, and James went as Naruto. No explanation needed. We got to the train station and boarded the train for downtown Tokyo. The train was crowded, but it was quiet. One thing we found interesting about Japan is that they are a very polite culture and keep to themselves on the train. James and I are very social, but we respected the people that kept to themselves and chatted with others who were social. That night, nearly everyone on the train was wearing a costume. We assumed they too were headed to parties and the same event we were going to. There were a couple of girls dressed as Sailor Moon and Sailor Mars. They smiled at us. We took the opportunity to go talk to them. "Good evening, ladies," I said. James winked at them. Sailor Moon flashed a flirtatious smile at me. "Nice costumes. Are you going to meet and greet tonight too?" "Hell yeah," I smirked. "I love Naruto," Sailor Mars said as she batted her lashes at James, who had a dorky smile on his face. "I'm Will and this is James," I told them. "What are your names?" "I'm Yuki," Sailor Moon smiled, "and this is Renko." We made small talk with the girls for a while. It was about 8 p.m. when we stopped at a train station near Kokuryo. A man entered the train dressed as the Joker played by famous actor Joaquin Phoenix. He had everything down to the green slicked back hair, green shirt, orange vest, and red blazer and slacks. He had the makeup with a red mouth painted into a wide smile, the blue makeup around his eyes and the pasty white face. "Nice costume, dude," I called out to him. "You look awesome," James chimed in. The man glanced at us, nodded, and went to sit down by himself. "That's weird," James grimaced. "Yeah, it was. Wonder what his deal is. Let's go talk to him," Sailor Moon suggested to Sailor Mars. To our dismay, the girls got up to go talk to him. He didn't seem interested, but the girls persisted. We both shrugged and continued to enjoy the quiet ride. Though the Joker was looking around at everyone, he seemed agitated, and we started to get a bad feeling he was up to no good. We thought maybe he was drunk and didn't hold his alcohol well, so we did our best to ignore him. "Our stop is soon," I said, looking down at my phone. "Thank God," James sighed with relief. "Joker Man is starting to freak me out. He might be taking his costume too seriously. For reals, it's just a costume. I shook my head. We were minutes away from our stop, and James and I were anxiously waiting for the train to slow down, when suddenly, we heard people screaming. Sailor Moon and Sailor Mars were among them. We turned around to see that the Joker had pulled out a knife and began stabbing at anyone and everyone around him. The Sailor Moon girls were lying on their backs on the floor, blood pooling around their bodies and out their mouths. Within seconds, a mass panic took over and people were running like chickens with their heads cut off, screaming. James and I couldn't move from our seats as there were people on the floor covered in blood and people stumbling over them, trapping us where we were at. The Joker began to come for us, and I stood back in shock as he stabbed James in his side. I felt blood drain from my face as I watched my best friend double over in agony, blood squirting out his side. As we sat at the airport, I pulled out my phone and read up on some articles written about the Joker on the train. He was a Japanese man named Kato who had been obsessed with the Joker movie since it came out in 2019. He had been dressing up like him and going out into the public, mimicking him. Other than creeping out people, he hadn't committed any real crimes until that night on the train. In the movie, there's a scene where the Joker stabs a bunch of people on a train, and he was determined to do just that. He was even hoping they would give him the death sentence. Kato looked like a ghost in his mugshots. He had long black hair, dark eyes, and his skin was as white as the makeup he wore. For the time being, Kato was being kept in a mental hospital. But James and I refuse to go back until he is behind bars for good.